when each individual takes the time and does the work to really strengthen their own mindset, that's when we have these, what we call quote unquote power couples, right? These couples that are really able to show up for one another and show up for their mission. And so what's happening right now is that for every single person, our mindset is being threatened in a way that we have probably never experienced. And part of that is because we're all in this together.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
I think we are in business. Welcome, everyone. It's kind of 3 o'clock on Thursday afternoons. This is what happens with live podcast recordings, is sometimes your technology, your Zoom, doesn't exactly do what you want it to do, but we are totally rolling with it. I want to welcome everyone who is joining us for this live broadcast of the Entrepology Podcast. We tried this for the first time a little while ago, and it was actually a lot of fun to be able to do it. I did it with Chris Smith a week and a half ago, and I wanted again to try this out. Excuse me. And today I'm super excited to be joined by my friend and colleague, Dr. Shamala Kiru. So we are going to jump into recording in just one moment, everybody. Shamala, are you good to go?
I am good to go.
Amazing. This is fun for us too, guys, because it keeps us on our toes just a little bit more than normal. So I'm going to kick things off, and then we are going to jump right into this interview all about high performance relationships at difficult times. So welcome everyone to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass. These are the themes we are exploring. Dr. Shamala Kiru, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, you are coming back, which is really exciting. And we had a conversation a number of weeks ago around communication in high performance relationships. And I invited you back because right now we are all facing something totally unprecedented, which is an unlimited amount of quality time with the people we love, which maybe was a dream for many of us 8 weeks ago. And now with the advent of COVID-19 and the escalating efforts to contain that virus, we are all being asked to stay home. And what it's doing is it's putting a different onus and different pressure on relationships. And in particular for my audience, we're entrepreneurs, we are working. And there are so many different pieces that we need to balance. And so I'm really excited to not only release this episode in a few weeks, but in particular, be able to have this conversation so we can add some value today. Shamala, can you start out by giving everyone a bit of a background as to who you are and why you're so uniquely qualified to talk about high performance relationships?
Yes, absolutely. So by training, by trade, I'm a registered couple and family therapist. So I work very specifically, systemically with people. So I look at every individual within their couple and family context. So I look at them within the context of their relationships. Also by training, I'm a registered psychotherapist. I've been in practice for close to 20 years. So my master's is in counseling, but my doctor and I actually did it in couple and family therapy. So my training is highly systemic. So I've always been really, really interested in understanding how our mindset and our communication style impacts our relationships, but then also the vice versa, how our relationships can really impact the quality of our life. And so for me, I've been practicing for twice as long as I've actually been a mom. And, you know, if you've heard the first episode that I've done with Megan, I would have shared, and I'll often share, that becoming a parent 10 years ago is truly what transformed the way I approach my mission and the way I approach my delivery of care, and has really transformed my perspective, particularly for female, high achieving, high performing women that are really trying to juggle all of these multiple roles and identities. And I have seen time and time again, the correlation between our ability to really master our mindset, our ability to communicate assertively or communicate with confidence, and how that really does feed into our ability to navigate our relationships well. And when we're able to do that, Megan, I really do believe that it improves our quality of life.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that background. And I really can't think of anyone better to sort of dissect this topic, because we can talk about relationships generally. And I think we first should talk about those sort of primary relationships right now, in particular with our partners, as we're balancing all sorts of unique pressures. And then I want to delve into some that I think are challenges for entrepreneurs in particular right now. One is, how are we balancing out this work with being at home piece? And where I'm really starting to feel it is this I had mom guilt before when I was focusing on work, but this is next level. Like when I'm on a, when I'm on a live, like I was so sweet about it, but I was like, guys, for real, 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 you can't come in this time, right? Because half these lives I've had a four-year-old on my lap, and she wants to be on the call with us. So let's really talk about our primary partner relationships first, and then let's get into this kid piece. What is some of the advice that you are giving couples right now with respect to the inordinate amount of time we're getting to spend together? And this isn't honeymoon time. This is high pressure time. Yeah. So how does that play out in a relationship, and what can we be aware of?
Right. Yeah. Great question. And when we started our conversation today, you did this really great intro, and you used the idea of, you know, we've got this excess amount of quality time together. And I've come to know you for quite some time, and so I know sarcasm is
what are we talking about,
you know, here? And so I caught that, but I want to use that as sort of a jumping board for the conversation around really what is needed, especially now, to navigate these relationships well, and not only navigate them well, but to actually continue to be able to invest in these relationships, our primary relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a real opportunity to do that, right? As you were saying, you know, we might have dreamt of having all of this time together, but right now it is not quality time. It is time that is filled with stress and pressure and uncertainty and unknown. And when we look at the couple system, it is actually strongest when each individual is executing at their fullest potential, right? So when each individual partner is executing in a way where they really have a hold of their mindset, Megan, where they're really able to be responsive and not reactive, where they're really able to make choices from an informed and self-regulated place, that is when relationships are at their strongest. And we know this when each individual takes the time and does the work to really strengthen their own mindset. That's when we have these, what we call, quote unquote, power couples, right? These couples that are really able to show up for one another and show up for their mission. And so what's happening right now is that for every single person, our mindset is being threatened in a way that we have probably never experienced. And part of that is because we're all in this together, right? So at a time where, let's say, you know, I might have been really struggling. I mean, the hardest time of my life was when I was a new mom. You know, not everybody in my circle was struggling with that. So I had friends I could go to. I could go to my mom, right? Like I could go to these people and get support. The challenge that we're all facing is that everybody's under stress.
Right.
Everybody's feeling that pressure. Everybody's feeling that overwhelm. And so it becomes that much harder for us to practice the really basic skills that allow each individual to sort of really catch hold of their mindset. And that begins to translate into the couple system real quick. real quick, right? That is why the highest time for infidelity, the highest time for relationship breakdown is when you've got a newborn. The reason being is because both partners are under an incredible amount of stress. That's what's happening right now. It's like we've all got newborns, right? Like we're not sleeping properly. Everything is unknown. It's all new.
And you can't have infidelity because you can't leave your house.
You can't leave your house.
Right? New problems,
right? And so the conflict is really increased. And, you know, I received a news release from CTV News, I think it was yesterday, and YRP reported that there is an over 22% increase in domestics since COVID.
Wow.
Right. So it's a serious issue, right? And so we are certainly talking about, difficulty communicating. We're talking about difficulty managing conflict, but there is, you know, an extreme to that as well. And so what we are seeing is a definite increase in the rise of mental health. And what we're going to see, I believe, on the other side of COVID is a pandemic around mental health. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point. And, you know, we talk about the relationship piece and we can get into intentionality around that. But can you give people some really quick pointers and tools to use with respect to the management of their own stress? Because when we're talking about this on a root cause level, it really requires that we first manage our own state. And we've been talking about this at length over the last 2 weeks, and we've done a series of lives to respective communities on this piece. But Can we back up and talk about some of those self-regulatory pieces that are just so critical right now?
Yeah, we need to back up and talk about that because, in my opinion, we can't talk about relationship strategies. They will all fall flat, whether it's parenting or whether it's around intimacy, unless we talk about the mindset piece, right? And so I did a couple of different lives earlier today, and one of the consistent messages that I have been sharing with all of my audiences is that I've always believed that we need to take radical responsibility for our own happiness. Right. That hasn't changed for me. The intensity with which I believe that and the urgency with which I am coaching people to do that has increased. We have no choice right now but to take radical responsibility for our mindset, each and every one of us. Because if we don't do that, Megan, we can't be there for our kids. We can't negotiate and navigate our relationships with our partners. And we certainly can't show up in our, like, with our professional selves, right? Okay. And so now more than ever, it is so important, guys, like, pre-COVID, you know, if it was sort of like a nice to do, like to practice self-care and to, you know, be super aware of your negative thoughts and to, you know, take a walk and you know, all if those were all nice to do's, I think the game has changed in that sense. The rules of the game haven't changed, but the importance of the game has changed. Right. These are now non-negotiables for all of us. We absolutely have to be accessing every tool in our self-care mindset toolbox right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such timely advice. And I agree with you around the imperative pieces. There are things right now that you can't let slide. And we know, I mean, we're also seeing statistics around alcohol consumption. We're seeing the reality is there are such better adaptive mechanisms to be able to handle the stress. But the challenge is because the stress is so big, if we don't have those mechanisms in place beforehand, then now is not necessarily the easiest time for people to start to make that switch. What I do find is sometimes easy for people if we can quickly switch the paradigm with which they are viewing the problem. And I know you traditionally have really great advice around the management of anxiety. Like how do we start to break it down and put it into a framework so that we can assess what we can control and can't control? Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I actually think it's just such a brilliant, quick triage mechanism to move people out of that reactivity.
Yeah, I love it. And it's you and I have chatted quite a bit over the last little bit. And I'm going to share a strategy in just a moment, but I always need to give context. The strategy I'm about to share with you guys is not COVID specific. It is not pandemic specific. It is a tried and true strategy that we can implement and should implement at every stage, at every developmental stage. I use this with children in my practice. I use this with my own child. I use this with myself. It's a life skill as far as I'm concerned in terms of how you can really take stock of your fears, your anxieties, and your worries. Okay. Because fears, anxieties, and worries are all simply driven by your thoughts. That's all they are. They're just a reaction to your thoughts. They're an emotional, visceral reaction to the thoughts that you're having. And one of the simplest ways, it's not easy. I should preface it. It's not easy. It's going to take work and you're not going to feel like doing it most moments, but it is quite simple. You're simply going to grab, little clipboard. You're going to grab a pen. I always like to just draw two columns on my page. Let's see if I can do that. I don't know if you can see. You probably can't see. I just cut my page in half.
Right.
And on the left side of the page, what I will write down is I will write down all of the things. First of all, I'll identify the worry. So I'll start with, I feel worried or I feel anxious because I think. And sometimes, you know, especially right now with worry, anxiety, and fear, we might have 10 thoughts that drive one feeling. We might have 10 thoughts that leave us feeling worried. So you're going to write those down, right? And then what you're going to begin to do is you're going to identify what you can control about those specific thoughts on the left-hand side. And then on the right-hand side of your page, you're going to write down all of the things that you cannot control. Okay. And I'm going to give you a little hint, to help you navigate this exercise well, and you might want to jot this down if you've got your phone or paper pen with you. The only two things we can control are our thoughts and our actions.
Stop and say that again.
We know each other too well.
I know.
I like to repeat myself when it's super important.
Yeah, this is important.
The only two things that... like, and this is every single person on the planet. The only two things we can control are what we think and what we do. It's that small, that list, right? When you're generating the list of options, you need to be creative right now, because crisis requires creativity to move through. You need to be creative with your options. It's not going to be the options that you had 4 weeks ago,
right?
You need to be creative with what your options are for what you can control. But you can control what you think, right? Mm-hmm. Simple, not easy. And you can control what you do. Simple, not easy, right?
Yeah.
And then you're going to go to the right-hand side, and then you're going to write down all of those things that none of us can control. And guess what, guys? We're all in the same boat on that list. That list, we all share that list. There's tons of stuff we can't control. And there's tons of stuff being thrown at us constantly, reminding us of all the things we can't control. You're going to write that list down because you're going to take it out of your head. Because when you take it out of your head and put it on paper, you interrupt the cognitive pattern of ruminating, which is what drives anxiety. Ruminating is turning over a thought that you're not going to action again and again and again in your head and going nowhere with it, like a hamster on a wheel. And you're going to write all those things down. And the thoughts or the ideas on the right are all the things that you need to move towards acceptance on. Right? There's a lot right now that every single person needs to move towards acceptance on. And that is going to be your number one critical strategy for managing your anxieties and your worries and your overwhelm right now. And you can do this as an adult. You can do this with your children in a really simple way, right? You can brainstorm this with your children and help them to really identify at a very young age and equip them with this critical skill in terms of emotional intelligence, in terms of identifying the difference between the things we can control and the things we can't. The things we can control are what we need to action.
Right.
And that's what's going to give us some momentum right now.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? I've been doing this triage with my kids for the last week. And I think what you see is kids are always such a litmus test, and it's so obvious with kids, is just the variety of how people are processing information right now. Some people are leaning in, some people are paralyzed, some people, everyone's in different circumstances in terms of how this particular situation is derailing the plans in terms of how they were moving forward. But even in my own, even in my own kids, their worries are entirely different. One is around hanging out with her best friend. One is worried every day that we are going to die of the virus. She's four.
And these are the two camps that people are sitting in, Meg. Like, these are literally the two camps, what you just named, right, with your girls, are the two camps that humanity is sitting in. Some of us are worried about the virus killing us. Right? Or someone we love.
Yeah.
And some of us are worried about all the other stuff.
Yes.
Sorry, go.
No, I was going to say, and I have three kids. So we have like a whole other pool.
There's a whole other.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think it's worthwhile having that conversation. And I think I'd love your perspective on this. But I also found when I would start to talk to my husband about it, just being really open, what are your primary concerns right now? And he said to me a few weeks ago, and he never asks me if I'm stressed. I think he doesn't want to know. But he said to me the other day, he's like, are you stressed right now? And I gave him my honest answer in terms of where I was at. But I so appreciated him asking me and giving me the space to just share how I was feeling about this. Yeah. And I think that's a key thing with these relationships right now, is just being like, what space do you need? What is what's your stress in this most proximate moment? It made a huge difference for me just being asked.
Of course, of course. And, you know, like, I go back to the stage, you know, of having a newborn, right? I go back to that only because it's one of the few times within a couple's life that they are experiencing almost, not exactly, but almost the exact same levels of stress around the exact same thing. Right. There's such a parallel.
Meaning the two people are experiencing
the two people
stress.
Within the relationship. It's one of the very few times that happens for a couple. Right. And you bring up such an important point, because what often happens, what often gets in the way at that time, is people are so damn afraid of asking each other, are you okay? Because we're afraid that our partner's going to go, no, I'm not. Like, I'm losing my marbles right now. I cannot hold it together.
Yeah.
Right? We're so afraid of what that other person is going to say that we often don't make space to hear it, because we're afraid we won't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Right? Like, one of the biggest sources of stress, conflict, one of the biggest things we see in couples therapy is couples fighting about money. It's one of the top things that couples fight about, is money. And everyone is feeling the financial strain right now. Right? And simply asking your spouse, your partner, that question, like, how are you doing with this? Like, are you worried about our finances? Most of us don't want to know the answer to that.
Right.
Because it triggers our own stuff. And then what do we do with their stuff? Right? So this is the dangerous territory of not talking.
And so when we do talk and we do hear what we don't want to hear, then where do we go?
Yeah. I think every amazing, authentic conversation starts with, you know, I'm not sure where to go from here. I'm not sure where we're going to land. I don't have an answer for you.
Right.
I don't necessarily have a solution, but I am committed to walking this journey with you. Right. And I'm okay with you not having the answers for me. Can you be okay with me not having the answers for you right now?
Right.
Right. And can we lean into the discomfort of what that's going to feel like to sit in this overwhelm together? Right. And I think when we can validate that and kind of go, okay, then we can move into a creative space.
Yes.
Then we can move into a, are you ready to begin thinking creatively with me?
Because you've got your team.
You got your team.
You're not in a silo.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. And there's so many nuances on those conversations. But the thing I keep hearing you talk about over and over again in the last few weeks is just to show up with intention.
Yeah.
And be transparent. And I always reference this because, and I know you always smile when I do, because it's like groundbreaking for people. But I feel like when we're under stress, we communicate in two ways. We are aggressive and we are passive aggressive. Mm-hmm. And we don't know how else to communicate. And you always talk about this third option, which is just being assertive about how mm-hmm. you are feeling. And imagine what would happen if we all just were not angry, not, you know, hiding how we felt and secretly trying to elicit a response. But we just said, I'm feeling this and this is what I suspect I need right now.
Right. Right. And let the other person off the hook. They're not responsible for finding a solution to how you feel.
Right. Right.
Right. And I want to introduce a third passive, aggressive, a third not helpful option that's happening right now more than ever is passive, which is we just don't say anything.
Right.
We don't share. I think that is happening more than ever right now, Megan, within couple systems where people are just holding it all in with their partners and not sharing what's going on because they're afraid.
Of the outcome of sharing?
They're afraid
or acknowledging.
To admit it. They're afraid of putting that additional pressure on their partner. Mm-hmm. They're afraid of putting it out there and there's no solution. But none of this is true. Like, of course there's solutions. Of course there are, there are creative ways to navigate what I'm experiencing. Right. But thinking trap, if we tell ourselves, if I say it, then I'll know there's no solution and there's no, there's no way out of this.
Right.
Why even tell him? Why even tell her?
Right. And I'm finding such comfort right now in knowing that we are all in this together. There's something incredibly isolating about thinking, you know, your business is in trouble, but no one else's business is in trouble. Or my marriage is experiencing strife and no one else has that problem, or whatever the case may be. And I had this conversation with another entrepreneur a few days ago, and she said, you know, the power of this moment is also that we are all here. The power is that we can brainstorm together. We can form groups online. We can navigate it. There's actually more solutions on the tape. Although the problem is huge, there are more solutions and more people thinking commonly about the problem than we've ever seen before.
I agree.
And part of it is switching and tapping into that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the beauty of where we're at right now is it is forcing us to flex our creativity muscles. Like we are having to be super creative with our solutions, right? Like we're having to be creative about how we are connecting and how we are finding separateness, right? We're having to be really creative about what brings us joy and how do we unwind at the end of the day, or how do we, right? Like how do we, you know, you and I talked, I think last week on something, and I mentioned this idea of, you know, continue to date your spouse during COVID, right? Just because you're home all the time doesn't mean you're spending intentional time together. Have dates, right? Have that intentional time together.
I am laughing right now because I'm going to do a segue for people. I don't know if anyone follows JP Sears, Awakening with JP on Instagram. He did a thing on his IGTV the other day on how to ruin your relationship during quarantine. And it was so sweet because his wife is like, let's have a date tonight. And then he had this like explicit of like, no, like I'm not spending another second. It's the whole thing is very, very funny. Right. And he brings humor to the situation that we're all in. But I had a date with my husband two nights ago. I taught him how to play the game Pandemic, which felt sufficiently ironic. And we actually had fun and we created levity in the moment. And I think that's part of it. We've sworn off all serious television programs.
Yeah.
We are only watching things that make us laugh right now because it shifts your physiology.
It does.
So you can laugh right now. I mean, you suddenly open up creativity. You've put yourself in a totally different neurological state than if you are stuck in worry and you're stuck in anxiety and you're stuck in fight or flight. When you're in a parasympathetic state because you are laughing, suddenly you are solution oriented. And when you are laughing together, not in isolation, mm-hmm. watching your own YouTube things, but laughing at the same thing. We also know that that triggers oxytocin. And mm-hmm. and so I want to speak to the physiology of what we are able to control right now as well, because watching CNN together is not going to help the tension that is existing in your relationship. But watching a comedy together, or if you love music, listening to music together, they have done these studies where they look at people when they are at music concerts together, and how we can see this unification in terms yeah. of people's states and their physiological states. This is really powerful stuff. And these are easy ways, free ways of starting to control your physiological state and setting you up for psychological success. So I wanted to throw those pieces in there, because this is the time you pull out all the tools, you pull out all the stops.
Right. And do all of the things that you might not have had time to do before,
right.
or that you didn't need to be that creative, because, right, you could just hire a babysitter and go out for dinner or whatever it is. Right. And not to say that that's not amazing, right? Mm-hmm. It is. But we have to be that much more creative, and we have to learn to turn to one another and enjoy one another in new and fresh ways. And that can be really, really powerful for long-term relationships. So what we know is that in order for us to maintain desire in long-term committed relationships, we have to still have the capacity to see our partner in new and fresh ways.
Right.
Right? Desire is contingent around novelty.
Right.
Right? Marriage, stability, security, being together forever, that kind of sucks the desire out of, right? Like there's no novelty to that, right? So stability and desire are almost like opposite.
Right.
So how, within a long-term committed relationship, do we begin to still feel connected, feel that spark, feel that desire for our partner? And part of that is novelty, introducing novelty and being creative and just connecting in new and fresh ways. And I think that's, again, the opportunity that we have right now, Megan, as you were saying, is pick a new series that you can watch together.
Yeah.
Right? Something light, something fun, something that you can enjoy. Mm-hmm. Right? Go for walks. Like, let's be honest, you know, I think I remember when I got married, I was like, oh yeah, my partner and I will like have dinner and we'll go for a walk together. We don't have time for that. Right. Right. Or we haven't had time for that. Right.
Yeah.
But now we do. Right. Like now we do have time to begin doing some. And yes, right. we've got kids and they might have to come along on those walks for us. And right. We have to keep being creative.
Right.
Right. How do we keep being creative around how to navigate our current circumstances? Mm-hmm. But I think you're absolutely right. Like there is something so powerful around experiencing something positive together. Mm-hmm. Right. That's why couples who work on projects that they're equally committed to together.
Yeah.
It tends to intensify their commitment.
Right.
And their intimacy. Right. So there really is something to that.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny. Even something really as simple as just before this all started, I got my husband and I this really complicated puzzle. We don't do puzzles together, except maybe on rainy days at the cottage. And I was like, we are thoroughly enjoying pouring a glass of wine at night working on this project together and like
yes.
fighting over puzzle pieces. And
yes.
we joke that we are living our retirement right now. But there's also something really, easy and peaceful and slow and not frenetic about what's happening in relationships right now as well. And it doesn't mean there's not stress. I'm not sharing this from this place mm-hmm. of absolute privilege where we really have nothing to worry about in the whole world except our puzzle pieces. Mm-hmm. It's just we're really consciously trying to create opportunities throughout the course of our day to infuse positivity and then step yeah. back and actually be grateful for it. Right. And even with our kids right now, they're like, oh my gosh, we're doing our grateful thing at the dinner table again. But what it's doing is it's forcing them to understand this notion of silver lining. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, I know I can't be with my friends, but This was really fun today. And Bela, who's so worried we're going to die of the virus, she's like, well, we didn't get dead today. And we're like, okay. So we keep reorienting her to the fact that our risk is low, but she's like, she's like, this is a win. So, you know, what it does is it allows us to take their fears. It allows us to start to shift them. And I'm certainly not the expert in these particular pieces, but these are little small changes, easy changes, free changes, that we've put into play that are actually making a really big difference for us.
Right. And what I love about what you just shared there is it literally is, you know, where we started with the strategy, the mindset strategy, what you can't control. It's that in action, right? What you can't, like, there's so much we cannot control, but in the moment where you're sitting with your family and you have a practice of gratitude around the dinner table, or in those moments where you're fully engaged in this puzzle, that's not going to solve the world's problems. But you're not going to solve the world's problems in that moment anyway.
Right.
But you can fully engage in this moment with your husband. And the truth is, and I think the hope that we all carry is that we'll never have this. It will never be like this again. Like this is a unique crisis and it's a unique opportunity. Right. And so we can truly choose to lean in to all the blessings that are afforded to us from this crisis.
Yeah.
Like puzzles on a weeknight.
Right.
Like, when was the last time you were able to do that?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm really loving it. Shyamala, I want your perspective really quickly on how we manage the need to work and our kids, and you're in that boat. What are some of the things that you are deploying in managing your own guilt around it, but also in communicating to your kids, this is something different. You don't normally see mommy or daddy in this context, but we still have things we need to execute on. What are some of the conversations happening at your house around this?
Yeah, great, great, great question. And this is literally, I had this conversation before I jumped on this, because I've been on different things all day. And sometimes I'm like I'm in my home office, like I'm popping out of here for like 20 minutes at a time. Right. To like check on my daughter and like it feels, you know, for me, what I've had to do a few things. One, from a mindset perspective, I have had mommy parent guilt is a real thing. It's a real struggle. I'm usually pretty decent at managing it. Right. Like I've worked really hard at managing that. I've chosen to be a working mom. I love being a working mom. I've had really transparent conversations around why it's so important to me to work as hard as I do at my mission with my daughter, because I want her to understand that. Right. Yeah. And when she says, oh, I mean, you have to work, I said, no, I don't have to. Right. I choose to. Like, my work brings me so much joy and it allows me to be a better mom.
Right.
And I want to model this. Like, this is something that's really just core to who I am and part of my identity.
Right.
That's really important to me. So I've done a lot of my own work around managing that guilt. And I think probably many people in your own community, in your community have, Megan. Mm-hmm. What's happened now is that mom guilt, like you said, has gone next level. And I have been cutting myself a little slack.
Right.
And saying, you know what, Shyamala, you're going to feel a bit guilty every day. The truth is, I feel guilty every day because this is not what I had signed up for.
Right.
This is not what, like, no one signed up to, like, quasi homeschool their child, run a business or work from home, right? Like, nobody signed up for this weird world that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to identify and like even make a little bit of space for, I'm going to feel guilty right now, but I'm not going to give in to that. I'm going to continue to have those hard conversations. So Meg, when I say, I have to say this to my daughter every day, I mean, every day and probably several times a day, I know this is really confusing. I know it's strange that I am at home and you are at home, but we're not spending time together during the day because I am still working. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm still working. And as much as I'm aware that my workload has decreased, my productivity has decreased since I've been in this space. She doesn't see that.
Yeah.
She doesn't get that. right? So I have to just kind of meet her where she's at and keep leaning into that. Like, I know this is confusing. I get it. This is so strange, isn't it? Like, I'm here, I am, and I'm upstairs in my office almost all day, mm-hmm. right? But, and I have to keep reminding her, you would have been at school during this time.
Right.
Right. So you wouldn't have noticed that I was working all this time. And I can understand how confusing it is. Right. And what we're trying to do is come to an agreement on something intentional mm-hmm. that we can do together every day. And it's the intentionality that's important. She does not buy into it all the time. I'm not saying, I want to be totally transparent here. She's not like, I get what you're saying, Mom. You're right. Let's just play dollies for that'll satisfy my needs. No, it doesn't satisfy her needs. It's still super irritating to her, right? She still sulks around and is like, oh, I can't believe you have to work again. Like, that is still all happening. I'm getting all the passive aggressive communication from my daughter, right? I'm just really working extra hard to not internalize that as I'm a terrible mom right now. Right. I'm not. I'm just trying to hold it together like every other mom out there.
Yeah. And I think having those conversations, kids remember those pieces.
Yeah.
And Naya's 8 and we had this conversation yesterday. I was like, you are going to remember this. Mm. But I said, the other thing, I had this conversation with my husband, she's going to remember how she felt during this time more than anything else. And she was really sweet this morning. She's like, Mom, I know you have to go and do work. And so we've been talking about it as the family business, and they have things they have to do for the family business right now, which is go outside and play and be quiet. But they're kind of taking this responsibility seriously, and we will see how long that lasts.
Yep.
Because I feel like every day is a new day, and it's a new need to be creative around how we manage these pieces because they're little.
I agree. And I think, you know, something we all have to do is really shift our standards around what our schedule, our routine looks like, you know, like just our and even productivity. We have to totally shift our perspective. And, you know, I know you work with a lot of high performers, Megan, and, you know, we like to produce, we like the outcomes. We like to say, I knocked 50 things off of my to-do list.
Yeah.
Right. We plan our businesses around quarters. We can't do that's just not possible in the same way. It doesn't mean it's not possible to some degree, mm-hmm. but it's not possible in the same way.
And it's a great opportunity for these high performers to move from these human doings that they are so used to having their accolades for to being human beings mm-hmm. and being mm-hmm. present and being intentional and all of those elements that you talked about, which is often a struggle for those high performers. It's a chance to find balance and some integration and view the opportunity that's been laid at our feet. Shamila, I've got some questions for you.
Go for it.
We are going to switch gears a little bit into a portion of the interview that I call our KPIs. So key performance indicators, just like we have them in our business, I believe we have them in how we live our life as well. So can you hang tight? I've got some stuff coming your way.
Yep. Let's do it.
You're like, where else am I going to go?
Where else am I going to go, Megan?
You can't leave right now. So first question, what's the most impactful book you have ever read?
That I have ever read? That's a really tough question. I don't know that I could pick just one, but you're going to make me. I know you will. So
no rules.
I've been down this road with you before. I think you did pick one before. One of the most impactful books that I've read recently, I'd have to say, is a Brené Brown book, which will probably be familiar to many people within your audience. Daring Greatly.
Love it.
Really, really love that book. Like, I think every other line is underlined in my copy. I still like hard copy books. And that continues to have an impact on me.
Love it. What's the most consistent thing you have going on for your health right now, given that we can't get outside and be part of our normal routine?
Mm-hmm. Well, so these things were not consistent the first 4 to 5 days when I was in complete shock, but I have reintroduced hydration.
Nice.
Like just drink the water
yeah.
And movement. And most days it is exercise in my basement. And some days it's, you know, out in the backyard running around. We've got a new puppy. So it's those two things that I'm really trying to stick to because they do wonders for my mental health.
What's the most badass thing you have done in the last 2 weeks to combat your stress with respect to COVID?
Oof. Again, that is a good one.
It's not business like usual over here.
No, it's totally not. And it's actually just not business like usual. I think one of the most impactful things I've done is slow down. Because I don't like to go slow. I move fast.
I know that
about
you.
I like to move fast. Yeah. I don't like, it's so hard. Ask anybody that knows me, is slow down. I think that's probably the most impactful thing that I've done. Slow down. And in slowing down, really listen to what my heart is telling me through this time and try to lean into what others are telling me during this time and just looking for opportunities to serve.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that's pretty badass because it's not everyone's intuitive nature right now. It requires a really strong and courageous intent to lean into that. What are you doing for fun or play?
Outside, just getting outside and sometimes it'll be like in between these calls and even if it's 5 minutes, I will get outside.
And finally, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I believe we learn to become entrepreneurs when we go after our passion and our purpose really hard.
I love that answer. Dr. Shamala, where can we send people to learn more about the things you're up to?
You can hang out with me on Instagram, dr.shamalakiru. I don't know, Megan, maybe you'll put that somewhere because
show
that's
notes.
A tough
we'll
one
do it.
To spell. Amazing. And my private Facebook community, The EQ Lab on Facebook, is where I show up live every Thursday at 11 a.m. To serve and support.
I love it, Shamala. It's always a pleasure to have these conversations. I'm so excited you got to join us today. And what I love about Shamala's initiative is that she has taken a traditional practice, and really in the last year, she's moved so much of the care that she's able to provide online. And this is one of the things that we are exploring over in the Anthropology Collective, which is our online Facebook community. Right now, we are running bi-weekly wisdom shares. And what we do with these wisdom shares is we take female entrepreneurs who had historically been running businesses, I'm going to call it in the real world, and are looking for guidance and advice on how they can start to move their businesses virtually. So we've got some upcoming closet audits happening. We are making sourdough bread. We are doing painting with kids, all sorts of things that traditionally we would have done in person. We are getting really innovative and really novel in terms of how we bring this to the online space. This is all happening in our Anthropology Collective community, and I would love my listeners to join us over there. So thank you again, Shamala. Thank you everyone who tuned in live today for this recording and who is catching the episode that's going to be coming out on a Tuesday in the next few weeks. Take care, everybody, and thanks so much for being here.
Hi, guys. Thank you.
The Anthropology Podcast is about leveling up your mindset, your health, and your business so you can maximize your impact in this world. To that end, we're going to begin with a new series of offerings to help you have that impact you've always dreamed of. Over on the Anthropology Podcast page, we're going to start doing live broadcasts of episodes. Sometimes these will be solo episodes, and sometimes these will be with guests. This is your opportunity to interact with us live as we are recording your favorite episodes. Adjacent to our Facebook page, we also have the Anthropology Collective, a free Facebook group with hundreds of fellow entrepreneurs just like you. In the Anthropology Collective, we're going to keep you up to date on upcoming masterclasses, interact daily, as well as have new offerings like our Badass Book Club. After a 2-year hiatus, we are bringing it back. Our new April and May selections are going to be announced in the coming weeks, and we would love for you to participate in all of these new virtual offerings. I believe that when people have their health, they can change the world. That is what inspired us to start this podcast in the first place. And that is what is inspiring us to keep going. I'm so appreciative of all of you. Give us a like over on Apple iTunes and come and join us in the collective. We'll see you there.